Welcome to the Women of Letters podcast. I'm Jules from the Supernatural Wiki.
And I'm Amy, also known as Sweet Undine, over at the Winchester Family Business. And today we're going to be talking about the mid-season finale. Bum, bum, bum.
Holy terror, Batman. I mean, just holy terror.
It would have been really funny if it was holy terror, Batman. Might have been a little inappropriate.
A little bit of trivia there, says the wiki person. Because the title is actually based on, there's a Frank Miller graphic novel. So Frank Miller, who did Dark Knight and various other things, he did a graphic novel called Holy Terror, which is about a superhero who battles Muslim terrorists. Terribly racist and appalling. But it was originally called Holy Terror Batman. So there you go.
Oh, there you go. Well, there you go.
Little bit of comics trivia.
A bit of comics trivia. So how did you come out at the back end of that mid-season finale, Jules? Traumatized?
Well, it's funny. I'm funny in that I often have a delayed emotional reaction, and we won't talk about why that happens to me, but a couple of times things like a swan song comes to mind, that it's not immediately after the episode. You know, I have feels at the final scene, but it's actually today I've been, and maybe it's because, you know, I've been at work during the week and that, but it was last night and today that I've been really a lot more upset. Last night I rewatched, I'm going to forget the name of it, but 7:21, the episode when Kevin was introduced. And so going back and seeing, you know, where Kevin came from, and thinking, I suppose, reflecting on what's happened to Kevin, reading is fundamental, that's right. Okay.
I was just loading the wiki myself. I'm like, oh.
I think reflecting on, you know, and I think I posted yesterday, you know, he was 20 when he died, and, you know, you look back at where he came from, who's this, you know, he's this teenager about to leave high school, who's, you know, trying to get into college and balancing his schedule of study and playing the cello. And if you go back, just that music from the cello in the light of the end of this week's episode broke me. So yeah. I suppose just thinking back about what a real tragedy Kevin's, and I mean, we're jumping a bit ahead here from the episode, but that I really saw. And I think Dean said it to him at one point, you know, basically once you get chosen, you know, for one of these destiny jobs, you don't have any choice. And Kevin really never had any choice in this. I mean, he didn't have a choice whether to become a prophet or not. It wasn't a life he was born into, or it wasn't the family business. He was literally struck by it. And at no point along the way has he really had much option to make a choice to get it, to get out of it, if you like, or do something different. And so, and his death in a way was, I saw a number of people, you know, oh, he should have gone out fighting and, you know, a heroic death. But, you know, this was even more tragic really then, because he just gets killed because he's a threat to Metatron, and it's not a heroic death in any way. He's just, you know, a name struck off a list. So... Mm-hmm. So that's how I've been feeling. Have you been feeling?
Yeah, yeah. I had a fairly strong inkling that that was going to happen. I think
But I must say I didn't. I was, other than my normal, oh, it's a mid-season finale, you know, maybe something big's going to happen. I didn't expect anyone to die.
I think the promo to me kind of gave it away a little bit. Maybe it's because it's what I do for a living, but like just the way they were looking at something on the floor, I was like, oh, they're in the bunker. This can only be one thing, you know. Because I was like, maybe they break the tablets. Well, I wouldn't do that because they glue themselves back together again anyway. So I wasn't completely shocked that he died, but I was completely shocked that he died, if you know what I mean. So I was like, I watched the last probably from when Dean started talking to who he thought was Sam and confessing all, I think I had my hand over my mouth for the rest of the episode and just, but I found it really traumatic, and I found it traumatic at the time. And I would normally, most of the time, I watch it when I get home from work on Wednesday night for us in Australia, and then I will normally watch it again. I'll usually watch it twice in one night. And I just couldn't bring myself to watch it again. It wasn't because I didn't enjoy it, because I thought it was super strong, but I just could not bring myself to watch that again. And I've watched it again since, and it was just as horrible. But I woke up in the morning with, like, this image of, and I mean, Sam stuff aside, which is also horrible. The whole thing was traumatic, that ending. But I literally woke up in the morning with like this image of Kevin's smouldering eyes in my brain. Mm-hmm. And I just...
And fuck you very much, VFX, for making that absolutely horrifically graphic image to burn into our brain.
It was really graphic. And I think possibly, you know, part of, like, when you originally posted that he was 18, because I thought he was must have been around 19 or 20, and you went 18, and I was like, and then, you know, is it, oh, no, yes, he's 20.
Sorry, my abilities to not math after I've had three glasses of wine.
Well, I was trying to work it out, but I don't, you know, I wasn't really sure what age people did stuff in the States regarding school, so I was like, oh, I have no idea. I thought he was probably about 19.
Well, we know, but he was, just to let people know how we worked that out, we had in one episode, which I can't remember off the top of my head, Blood Brother, when Sam's trying to find him, and he has a screenshot up which has Kevin's Princeton college application on it, and we see his date of birth. So just right. So it was 3rd of December 1995. So just so people were wondering where that came from.
3rd of December.
Yes, and Kevin, I don't know if you noted, but Osric posted some Kevin Tran fanfic about Kevin's birthday on the 3rd of December.
Oh, no, I didn't see that. Facebook. Yeah, I saw it on his Facebook. I haven't read it yet. But so what date did this episode go to air? On the 3rd of December?
No, it wasn't. It would have been the 3rd. Yeah.
So they killed Kevin on Kevin's birthday.
Yep. That's even more tragic.
I know. Damn, as soon as you said that, I was like, wait a minute. I think probably the fact that he was so young has contributed to my the overwhelming feeling of horror that this happened to that character. I think there is, you know, a part of me that goes, oh, but he was just a kid, you know. And I think what you were saying about him not... It's not like he was brought up to do this. It's not like there was a family business. As you say, he was struck from above. He became a prophet because he's been chosen. And he was really... He didn't want to do it, but he did it because that was what his, you know, destiny was. And even though I think he finally kind of started to understand that there probably was no way out of it, even though at first he seemed to be, if I can get this answer, then I'll be free. I think he probably came to the realization that was never going to happen. But he was just doing his thing and trying to work out the answers and, you know, trying to help the brothers. And it made it all the more tragic to me that, you know, he's almost like an innocent. Well, he was an innocent, I think, and that's what made it all the more tragic. And that he'd been embraced so much by the brothers and come to live with them, and Dean had called him family, and I felt like that they were his protectors as such. And, you know,
well, and that's where I've been rather angry with Sam or Dean, because I think, and I think this is not only my reaction. I think this has been portrayed in the show, and I mean, Kevin said it this episode, is that, you know, he keeps trusting them and he kept getting screwed. And I have no doubt that, you know, the speech Dean made earlier this season about, you know, that they die for Kevin and that, you know, that he was part of their family, absolutely sincere and believed it down to his fibre. However, he wasn't always central in their concern about, look, you know, looking after Kevin was not the number two thing on the list. Mm. He was, you know, they wouldn't put him in danger or anything like that. But, you know, I just think, you know, in that situation where they their experience and their being in this world for so long. There were so many times when, you know, Kevin was in harm's way. And, you know, I think in this episode I was – and I – yes, I – and before everyone types outraged emails or tweets to me, yes, I know, you know, life's hard for the Winchesters in making decisions. They're often between a rock and a hard place, to quote an episode title, about a sexy episode. We'll talk about it another time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the fact that Dean did not tell Kevin that – you know, hey, there's possibly a malevolent angel inside my brother on the loose in the bunker. I'm going to try this to get rid of him, but, you know, maybe you should go and lock yourself in a guarded room or something. I just felt that, you know, he keeps, and it is some, you know, Dean's asking for trust and not giving it in return, and that left Kevin exposed. And I think... I feel, and I'm sure Dean will, Dean would anyway, but I feel Dean is, you know, directly culpable in Kevin's death there, that, you know, it was a decision he made, and, you know, not for the wrong reasons, but I just think, you know, he should have trusted Kevin. If you're going to trust anyone in this situation, why wouldn't you trust Kevin?
And I have to say, I said exactly the same thing. I was like, he's going to absolutely – look, we know that he's going to be hating on himself, like, to infinity and beyond when we get back over what happened to Sam, but also what's happened to Kevin. But I was the same. I said exactly the same thing. Had Dean told Kevin, Kevin could at least have had his guard up. Kevin could at least have been going, is this Sam or is it the other angel?
Sure. Or he could have been in a room full of anti-angel sigils.
Exactly. Or... Dean could have said, just go and, you know, I'm just going to lock you up somewhere with you know, and so that you're safe, take the tablets, you're out of here, you know, I need you gone, you know, or get him to go, you know, take the Impala, drive away for a while, you know, see you when I've sorted this one out. And I know I think part of probably why they didn't have him do that is I honestly couldn't understand why he wasn't telling him. Like, when that scene was rolling out, I'm like, why are you not telling Kevin? You know, why are you saying you got to trust me? Just freaking tell him. Is he just that ashamed and horrified of what he's done to Sam that he just can't bring himself to tell anybody? I think he was probably thinking
more practical in that, the ongoing thing is, you know, I've got to... You know, I think particularly thinking he can't let on to whoever this angel is inside Sam that he knows now, because then he'll take control of Sam totally. So he's got this small window of opportunity to speak to Sam without the angel inside knowing, and to get Sam to kick him out. And so I suppose on the need-to-know basis principle, you know, he didn't want to have the chance of Kevin... you know, maybe letting something slip or whatever happening that would let on what he was doing. So I'm sure there were, and I'm sure the other things played into it as well. But I think it was also a bit of, and we've seen the show sort of say this again and again with Sam and Dean and Cass, is it's that, I don't know, almost arrogance of, it's often comes out of guilt. I caused this, so I've got to fix it. But we see every time they try and fix something by themselves, it doesn't work. Mm. You know, it's almost hubris that it's like, I've got to fix this. And it's like, Cass, you know, I've got to stop, you know, what Metatron's doing. It all goes to hell in a handbasket, or earth in a handbasket, as the case may be. Yeah. So, you know, I think that's the message of the show, is when you don't trust those closest to you or those around you.
Look what happens. There's a single-mindedness to the brothers, and what you were saying before was about how even though we believe Dean when he said we will protect you and we will die for you, Kevin was down the pecking order in that regard, because there is this kind of blinded single-mindedness that they've both got about the job and about each other and about what they've got to, about each other mostly, and you know, and what they've got to do and what they've got to do for each other, that everybody else kind of, you know, when Crowley said in What's Up Tiger Mummy, you know, that Kevin will end up being collateral because that's what happens to people who get too close to the Winchesters, you know.
It's exactly true.
It's exactly true, and they know it's true. I mean, Dean knew in that moment that it was true, as much as Sam could stand there and go, you know, it's not true, Dean, it's not true. Dean's like, well, actually. You know, and I mean, this was a perfect example of you know, that, and it was, you know, what Crowley said to Kevin ended up coming true.
Yeah, and I mean, essentially at the end of last season in Sacrifice, Dean chooses Sam over the whole world.
Over everything, yeah, exactly.
Now, you know, fair enough, he had some sort of a backup plan to, you know, stop demons, but really he was like, well, I can get rid of evil on Earth or I can save my brother. And as big R romantic and as you know, sort of epic that is to have that relationship with one other person, it's also incredibly selfish. Mm-hmm. And as you said, everyone else is going to fall behind. And I think this season in a way is a bit about consequences and those decisions, you know, obviously both Cass's decision with Metatron and Dean's decision with Sam have had extreme consequences for a lot of people.
And Dean's decision for Sam is probably has had one of the biggest, you know, negative consequences that the brothers have ever actually suffered through or, you know, are currently suffering through. And it's almost like, is this the lesson that Dean is finally going to be able to see, that, you know, it's saving each other at all costs, which they continue to do and continue to sort of tell each other not to do, saving each other at all costs is really not worth the cost sometimes. And maybe, you know, maybe this time he won't learn it, of course he won't, but maybe this time, you know, maybe he will, maybe he'll finally sort of release a little bit, you know, because he's always hanging on so tight to Sam. He just hangs on so tight, and
I think the only thing that can make a difference, but yeah, really to either of them, is, you know, it's an explicit instruction from the other one to, you know,
stop it.
But I don't know. I mean, and I think that's going to be fascinating. Obviously, you know. Sam's in a terrible way at the moment, obviously trapped and squashed down inside himself, and he's, you know, he's been taken over by Gadriel, and you know, what's going to happen. I don't know if we want to mention the teaser. Okay, we're going to mention the teaser, so if you don't want to get spoiled for the teaser,
just go la 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 for a minute.
But you know, we see in the teaser that Dean goes to Crowley as an option to be able to control or get Gadriel out of Sam, and you know, we all know that's not going to end well for Pete.
I know, but I loved it. I was like, yes, this is awesome, because I really do love Crowley, and I need to get him out of that basement. He's been locked in there long enough. I'm starting to worry about him, and that's not right. You know, I'm like, this is really like a bit cruel. I think we've taken, yes, he's the king of hell, but you know, like, I think this is taking it a little bit too far, guys. But so I was super excited by that. And you know what, and we shouldn't probably talk so much about the teaser, but it made me really curious as to, you know, is the deal just going to be, you know, help me and I'll let you walk, or is there going to be more to it? There's got to be more to it, surely. And, you know, or is any of Crowley's human side or whatever's been sort of hanging, lingering after the trials, I wonder if that's going to, anyway, we shouldn't probably talk. But I got so excited by that trailer, and I was thank you so much for putting that up, CW, because I think if we'd have ended on that episode and not had something then to look at as to what's going to be coming next, I would have been so distressed, in such a state of distress. But being able to see that and sort of know what's coming, you know, have a clue of what's coming next and get excited about that, I am so excited about the show when the show comes back. Like, I'm like, I think that was such a horrifically painful but epically good mid-season finale. I can't remember. It's been a while since I've been so devastated by a mid-season finale. And I can't remember being as, it, you know, like champion at the bit quite as much as I am for January 15 for us. You know, for the damn thing to come back. It's just so, which is a good thing, right?
Yeah. And look, it's interesting. Maybe on another podcast we can go through all the mid-season finales because they're interesting creatures. They don't always end. They often have a unresolved ending, but not always big enough that I would call a cliffhanger. Mm. But this was a true cliffhanger and ended on, you know, something – you know, really tragic and also, you know, and emotionally took us to a quite extreme place. I've only been able to watch it. I've watched it three times now, which usually I would have watched it a bit more by now with an episode I enjoyed that much. But, yeah, it is quite quite harrowing, particularly that last scene and Jensen certainly.
I actually was like going, oh, Jesus Christ, they've broken Dean. Because, I mean, he was like, you know, going, Kevin, I'm like, the dude's eyeballs are burnt out of his head. We know he's dead. You can see he's dead. His face is smouldering. And yet Dean's still kind of going, Kevin, yeah, I'm like, crap, they broke him. Like, I was really, gasping.
He actually couldn't process it. Just know that he's, you know, he's immobilized.
It was just so good. Jensen's kills at that kind of stuff, you know. It was an excellent button, wasn't it, Jules?
Great button, Jensen. Do you want to explain
we're talking about that is? Because both Stephen Amell and Jared both mentioned that it was a great button, and Jules and I were on Twitter going, what the hell does that mean? So we actually googled it and eventually found that it's basically, you know, like the killer sort of knocking the nail on the head of the final image of a final scene, you know, it's like the emotional impact of the final image of the final scene. So, it was a great button. It was a great button. But that was so confusing. I'm like, what the hell's a button? I'm so confused. But yeah, it was amazing. He did that. And anytime his bottom lip pouts out like that, I just burst into tears. So.
Oh, well, no, you could see, and I think it was, you know, Jensen tweeting on Jared's account mentioned that
I saw that.
That he, you know, he Osric wasn't there when they filmed his coverage. It was just the camera. So the fact that he, you know, and all he had to do was think about that image of Osric, of Kevin with his eyes burnt out, and that, you know, he got to that place, which, it's, you know, you can't watch someone you care about experience that grief without feeling it, and yes, it was quite as much as we joke about the one perfect tear, I think we joke because it's real. I found it really hard to watch. And anyway, let's go back a bit earlier in the episode.
Sorry about that, everybody.
Even went straight to Traumaville at the end. But of course, you know, we started off in a slightly, and I have to say though, the teaser, the opening scene, is like one of my favourite ever. So, which is where we've got the Melody Minstrel Glee Club arriving in the bus to the biker bar, and taking out the biker angels. And I just thought that whole thing was just so stunningly choreographed and looked deliciously beautiful. Jerry Wannick, production designer, tweeted a photo of that bar that they built
in eight days. It's
inside
phenomenal.
And out for the opening scene.
So it was fantastic.
And that image of the Glee Club
singing,
white, covered in blood.
And then getting back on the bus and singing.
Just, I mean, beautiful, you know, and the idea of the they're all angels who've just, you know, slaughtered each other, you know, I think works as just the most gorgeous horror image. If you want to get deep about it, I think it you could possibly read it as a commentary on the state of religion in America, but whatever, it was just...
I think the whole show is some kind of commentary on the state of religion, isn't it? these days.
But a wonderful open that, you know, certainly had me right into it.
Yeah, it was a very good opener. Yeah, it was.
And of course, we get the boys catching up with Cass there. So how did you feel seeing human Cass on scene as agent? Well, he didn't give his last name. That's a thought. I wonder what his last name was.
No, he didn't. It was good to have Cass back. I have to say that, jumping ahead again, I'm pretty glad that he's got his grace back, though. I prefer Angel Kick-Ass, Angel Cass, to Human Cass. I think Human Cass, we probably didn't get to... I think Misha will be disappointed that he's not Human Cass for longer, because I know he's spoken quite a lot about wanting to explore Human Cass, and I don't really think that we got a chance to explore Human Cass at all. Really only very small amount. And I always get, I've said this before, I mean, I think I love the fish out of water stuff with Cass, but I often get a little uncomfortable if they use him as like comic relief, because I feel like, you know, I feel like there's somehow a little bit disrespectful of that character in some ways. But, you know, I really liked in that scene in the bar how he was just trying really hard to sort of fit in. You know, he's going to the bar and buying drink and, you know, and it's his first beer as a human. You know, it was all kind of like, am I doing it all right? You know, and there he was with the two people that he trusts the most in the world, sort of having more new experiences and trying to make sure he's doing everything like he should be doing. And I thought it was, you know, I thought it was a nice scene.
Heartbreakingly adorable.
It was. And then, of course, when Dean, I thought for a second he was going to tell him, and then he sort of didn't. Yes. But, you know, there's Cass with his puppy eyes again, heartbroken when Dean goes, you know, like, it's great to see you, man, but we just can't be working with you because of this reason.
Well, and again, I'll bring up the trust issue, because he could have, you know, what was the reason? I mean, you know, he could have trusted Cass with the information. Now, obviously, again, need to know. The more people know, the more likely, and Sam's already starting to, you know, be suspicious of all these gaps in his memory. So, again, I think there's quite a practical reason why he hasn't. But also, you know, he's choosing to hurt Cass for a reasonable rationale. But still, I just, you know, Dean, you've got to trust people.
Yeah, he does. He just doesn't trust at all, really.
Not when Sam's at stake.
He's just so blinded to everything else when there's, you know, it's his brother's life on the line. It's like nothing else matters to Dean.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's part of what we love about him, but it's also part of what frustrates us and what causes so much pain throughout the show. And for the brothers, really, is that kind of love. But, I was the same. I was like, just damn well, can we just tell the angel the story? Because, you know, of all people, Castiel may be able to understand or help. You know, I think of all people, Cass probably would have understood. And it would have made him understand why Dean was, you know, pushing him out of his life. And if for no other reason, it would make Cass feel better about stuff.
Then again, as we've, you know, seen it over many years with them, you can't always predict that. And Castiel may have been appalled and horrified and thought it was the right thing to do to tell Sam.
Which
or
is...
speak to the angel inside, which would have obviously had
screwed it.
Bad consequences. So, again, you know, I can certainly see what Dean's thought processes would be, but...
Which is, yeah. I mean, that's exactly why I think he hadn't told Cass up to that point. Because up to that point, yeah, I think he probably thought there's a pretty bloody good chance that Cass is going to turn around and tell Sam, you know. Or,
and they're both, you know, Dean's had experience in the past of Cass doing things that Dean wouldn't have expected and didn't approve of. So it's that, you know, trust is based in a large part on predictability of outcome. Or it's easier when there's predictability of outcome. When there isn't, when you don't know if that person will react one way or another, I suppose is what I'm saying, is really trust.
Mm-hmm.
But Dean's being practical and saying, well, doing the list in his head of the times when Cass has done things where Dean wouldn't have thought he would do them and gone, well, not going to risk Sam's life here. But, yeah, it made it hard. I think the whole getting Cass getting his grace back, and we say early, I mean, it is almost halfway through the season.
Yeah, I think because we haven't seen a lot of Cass in the front half of the season.
Yeah, I'm sort of torn about it. I mean, it's funny that, you know, we've often talked over the seasons about the puzzle posed to the writers by having Cass with all these powers and able to, you know, fly in and save the day, and how they have to work to, you know, have that not happen every episode.
Yeah.
So here we now have Cass without that ability, but then I suppose the challenge is then how do you work him in to episodes where, you know, even if Sam wasn't possessed at the moment,
he could fix him.
Well, but what's his role? What's his? He is then just, not just, but he then becomes, it's a different thing because he just becomes a guy hanging out with the Winchesters going hunting, maybe. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but then it's three people in the Impala all the time. So yeah,
no one wants that. Well, I don't. I don't.
Anyway, he's whatever you want. I do think it's interesting that he got his grace back.
Well, it's exactly right, and it's always been, and I know we've talked about it. It's always been an issue for me about the character of Castiel, is that he's an all-powerful angel in their back pocket, and what does that do to any kind of tension or you know, dramatic situation within the show if they can just go, hey Cass, you know, can you just,
which of course they've dealt with by making him not be in their back pocket most of the time. He's either been an antagonist or he's been off his
doing
own
his own thing, or
not at their beck and call. So
and
I
then
suppose,
human,
and that may happen going forward. And I suppose the point being, and I'm answering my own question here, given this season's arc is very heavily about angels, it's even more difficult, and the fact that they all want to kill Cass, to involve him in the centre of the story if he's only human. Really, he is just a liability because they're all going to try and kill him and he's got no way of fighting back. Even though his investigative skills are coming along a little bit, I still wouldn't be standing next to him in a fight. He's good with an angel blade, but other than that...
I think for him to have a position within the story moving forward regarding the angels, he had to become an angel again. And I think he's going to be absolutely vital to whatever happens with the angel story and getting them back into heaven. I think he's going to play a really big part in it. But, you know, that bringing up this angel story and this angel war... Okay, I'm just going to say it. I really don't. I'm just so not interested in this angel war. And I think the reason being that, you know, we were sort of shown all these new angels in this episode. And I was like, I don't know who any of you are. And can you just all get out of the way for the people that I care about? Because I want to know what's happening with their story. Because, you know, I don't know you people. Just kill each other and be done with it. You know, and I'm kind of, I think it's probably be because we haven't, you know, we haven't, it's not like a Zachariah or something where it was an angel that we actually got
all
to
of them once.
Yeah, is it not an angel that we got to know and got to love to hate? You know, I mean, I love Zachariah, or even Uriel, who I really didn't love, but we got to love to hate him because, you know, we saw who he was and we were introduced to him as a character. So he became an angel that we had a relationship with, and Zachariah became an angel we had a relationship with. And then in this episode, and actually in this season, we keep meeting all these random angels, but because we're not connected to them and they're just shown to be such irredeemable dicks, you know, that it's very hard to sort of go, kill each other,
yes,
I don't care.
The only reason
I don't want them to kill each other is because they keep killing humans when they keep killing each other, which is just awful. And I'm like, you awful things. I just don't like the angels. And
I was hoping Muriel, I should say.
Muriel.
It's funny, just a segue for a moment. I know, I think I put on Twitter that as soon as Metatron revealed that it was Gadriel inside Sam that nearly everyone in fandom heard Galadriel and thought Kate Blanchett.
I'm still waiting for the fan art. It's like it was
an automatic switch over, and I could feel everyone going, no, he didn't say Galadriel, but he said Galadriel. And I think as particularly as an Australian, the minute I heard Meriel, I heard Muriel. Muriel's wondering. So that's where my brain went. However, my point being, I did think when she arrived, I thought, gee, it'd be nice to have a not horrible, dickish angel around who could be, you know, possibly another ally or just whatever. I'd like to meet the non-aligned angels and those who are just, you know, trying to get by on Earth. And I think it'd be interesting going forward, as you say, whether we get to get to meet, I suppose it'll be Bartholomew or Malachi more, and see, you know, get to know them more. Although I certainly, you know, I don't feel that either of them have been set up as long-term, characters for us to invest in. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. That said, although he's appalling and I think fandom wanted a hit out on him, Metatron is absolutely amazing.
I love him.
His scenes with Sam/Gadriel were fantastic, and going back to Uriel and Zachariah, really, there's nothing better than when someone creates a really delicious, horrible character, and everything about him I hate. Like I can almost smell his bad breath.
Yeah, he's awful.
He like makes my skin crawl, and he's evil and
But he's just awful, and I love him for that. Yeah. I think Curtis Armstrong is just doing the most amazing job because he's so smarmy, and I'm like, angels are the most gullible creatures on the face of the earth because they're falling for this crap.
Sure, I'll do your dirty work and be your number two, and you're going to get my, you know, get me friended on Facebook by the angels again. And
you
it's like,
idiot! I'm sitting there going, can he not tell he's being played? The angel, when Metatron said, I don't want the stupid angel. I'm like, well, you're getting a whole bunch of stupid angels because anybody who's falling for your shit is a stupid angel. So, but I agree. I think Metatron, I think he's deliciously awful. And I just really, really love him. And I really enjoyed him in this episode. I just thought he was fabulous. And I've been laughing and laughing and laughing at a screen cap that I used in my review. And we were kicking around this morning on an email trying to figure out for a line with it, where there's that wide shot of Metatron talking to, you know, the angel formerly known as Ezekiel. And like, Sam looks like about 500 feet tall next to him, and it's just the funniest screen cap. I think Metatron's great. I think Curtis is doing an amazing job with him, and you know, I can't wait till he gets his comeuppance, but I'm really enjoying him being on screen because he's just, you know, just so despicable.
I think also, you know, his job, if you like, you know, obviously they're, you know, Crowley, we've got some great villains around, but you know, Crowley has, or Mark in playing Crowley has the addition of, you know, always the snappy one-liners, even when he's locked in the basement, and a hot accent. But you know, Curtis with Metatron, you know, he doesn't, if you like, have that to sell the character, so he has, you know, which was a bit like, I think, Zachariah and Uriel. They weren't, I don't know, I'm not downplaying Mark's performance as Crowley. I'm just saying, you know, it's a bit easier to be the well-liked villain when you're like, you know, when you're charismatic and got snappy one-liners, whereas, you know, Curtis has to play Metatron, who no one likes.
Yeah.
You know, even though, you know, you can weigh up things Crowley's done, things Metatron's done, you know, they're both horrible creatures. But, you know, Metatron has that, Curtis has that, I think, more difficult job because, you know, he is unlikable. And I think that can be a harder sell, if you like, because you don't want the audience to totally disengage. You want them to you know, be engaged and hate the character. But yeah, I think he's done amazingly well, and I can't wait to see. Well, yes, when and if his Moshi's come up and says, and who's going to play, you know, a role in that. Mm. Now, what did you think about the reveal of Ezekiel, but not being Ezekiel, but Gadriel? Had you had a theory around that beforehand? Because I know there were lots of theories about, is Ezekiel good? Is he bad? Is he aligned with Metatron? Is he Lucifer? Is he...
You know, yeah. I can't. There was a lot of theories batting around about maybe he's not really Ezekiel. We're just taking that on face value, and I was like, yeah, true, possibly not. But I was kind of really desperate to believe that he was good. You know that. I was just really hoping that we had, like you said before, an angel that was good, and you know, maybe was doing the work that, you know, angels were intended to do towards humanity instead of just being horrible. And I'm not actually convinced yet that Gadriel is horrible. If he, you know, I think he's,
yeah, the killing Kevin didn't sort of,
yeah, no, that was pretty horrible. But you know, like I'm still kind of going, oh, there's such a lot of interesting parallels in that particular angel and like Castiel's journey as well as Sam, you know. So I think, you know, he was an angel pick very specifically for that reason. And yeah, but I was shocked. I gasped. I went, when I found out it wasn't Ezekiel, I did. I made a big gasping noise. And then I got onto Wikipedia and looked up who this Gadriel character was and went, oh my God. And I was pretty shocked. I think I didn't really think it wasn't going to be Ezekiel. I didn't know what Ezekiel's agenda was, and that was more what I was wondering about, whether he was, as you say, in cahoots with Metatron or had his own agenda, or why was he hiding out from the angels? I mean, that was obvious that he was hiding out inside Sam. Yeah. Confusion was around that rather than me thinking, I bet you anything it's going to be some other angel. I thought, well, that was pretty surprising.
Yes. Now, I was actually a bit stunned at first, because my first reaction was, well, what's the point of it being another angel? Because it wasn't like we knew a lot about Ezekiel, and even the fact that Cass had vouched for him didn't really mean much, because you know, he could have changed since Cass knew him. Cass mm-hmm. is a crap judge of character, we know mm-hmm. that. So my first reaction was sort of berserk, you know, what's going to be the point of it? And then my reaction was, oh, okay, well, this explains why, given, you know, Gadriel's got this backstory of having been blamed for introducing, you know, evil into the world, and he's been locked away in, you know, heaven's darkest dungeon for millennia, why he was looking for a hiding place. So yeah. that was good. And so then I was being hopeful and thinking, oh, okay. So I was thinking, oh, well, maybe Metatron will try and recruit him, but, you know, maybe he's become fond of the Winchesters and he'll rat out Metatron. And, of course, all my hopes were dashed down, because all it did was give him a motivation for wanting to get in Metatron's good books, because, fair enough, he wants to be a big-name angel again.
Yeah, I think it's probably I actually saw more of more than just wanting to be a big name angel again, is more of wanting to reclaim his good name. And I saw him as like I'm seeing his parallel as like another redemption story, you know, like everybody was doing what they had to do, you know. Dean did what he had to do when he shoved an angel inside Sam. Cass did what he had to do when he stole another angel's grace. And this Gadriel characters did what he had to do. Or I should say what they all did, what they thought they had
to do.
Yeah, you know, and Gadriel's done that as well. But I think it was a little bit more... I took it more along the lines of, this is my opportunity to clear my name and get my life back, so to speak, you know. And if working with Metatron is going to do that, then I'm going to do what I have to do to ensure that I'm in his good books, so that I can ride his coattails, you know, into glory again. I mean, I guess that's what I saw in it. So.
Yeah. Oh no, I don't disagree with you. I certainly think that's his motivation, and I suppose, and I think you're very right with that analysis of You know, they've each done what they thought was necessary for what they valued. And as I said, we've seen then, but there are consequences. And obviously Kevin's death was a consequence of Gadriel's action. I still can't believe he's dead.
Just awful.
Yes.
Just awful.
I think that's going to take a while. And, you know, obviously it's going to have a big impact on both Dean and, you know, and Sam when Sam finally finds out about it.
I think, you know, we were all kind of struggling with what's Sam going to think when he finds out that Dean decided to let an angel inside him to fix him? Sam's going to be so angry about it. And now it's just like, oh, my God, it's like 4,000 bazillion times worse than that.
Yes,
because
exactly.
Now Kevin's dead and Gadriel used Sam's body to do that. And if it, you know, and if it wasn't that Dean had let that angel in the first place, in you know, and we know why he did it. And, I mean, he even said it to Sam. What did he say? He said, you're in a bad way and so I was in a bad way. You know, and you know, I think that whole scenario now for me is like, whatever. I think Sam's going to be really more concerned about, you know, what the ramifications of,
yes.
And then he's going to be guilty.
Some of us had hope that you know, maybe in this instance, previous to this episode, Sam may have
understood.
At least been able to see why Dean did it, even if he was still angry. However, I think now, you know, Dean's motivations start to really matter a lot less.
Yeah, they do.
You know, at some point that balance between, you know, your intent and the outcome, the balance, you know, the consequences starts to change. And no matter what, how good your intent was, whether your intent, you know, had merit and was a good thing, that pile on the other side of bad consequences builds up. And I think that's now way past, you know, I don't think it would have mattered why Dean did it. It's going to, you know, whether Sam's reaction is just devastation or anger or both, there's a lot of pain to come.
I know, and you know, but and Dean is going to be in a lot of pain, you know.
Oh,
so
sure. I mean, you know, he's as usual got no time to, you know, sit around and grieve for Kevin because he's got to go and save Sam, and you know, at least now he's got Cass back on side, which, you know, will give him an ally. But you know, it's not going to be an easy way, and then we've still got a whole angel war raining down hell on everyone. So.
Yeah, it's you know, it's. Were you surprised when it turned out to be Gadriel, not Sam, that Dean was talking to in the storeroom?
Yes, because I thought that was. I thought that was going to be the. I did suspect it might go wrong. I did suspect that, you know, Gadriel might take over or something like that, but I didn't realize. And I think it was good because it gave us one of those moments that Supernatural does occasionally, where someone's taken over by a, you know, supernatural being or a spell or something. I think those thoughts probably quite align with what Sam would think and feel. And I think,
he did a great job.
I think Gadriel drew on that because he knows what Sam, you know, probably knows what Sam would think. So
what a creeper! He's really like, I was creeped out by. When we found out that it was him, and then when he said he'd been listening in, and Dean challenged him in the car going, how much are you hearing of what? And he's like, I've got better things to do, like heal your brother. And I'm like, I reckon he's hearing everything, Dean. And if you even thought for a moment that he wasn't, then, you know, that's really naive of you. And then just knowing that, you know, he clocked him when he heard Dean and Kevin talking, which implies that he was listening all the time, for him to even hear anything, and then being able to portray Sam so well and say the things that he said about Sam, you know, about Sam's feelings, were so spot on. I was just like, oh, this guy's horrible. Why was I saying that I liked him again?
Oh, I know.
Again, I don't like him. I'm angry with him.
Huge shout out to Jared for you know, his portrayals, you know. all of this season, but particularly in this episode, I think, of switching, you know, between the characters, and also to Jensen for having to act against. I'd love someone to ask Jensen at a con, maybe when you're in Vegas.
Yes, Amy. What would you like me to ask him?
Oh, well, just, you know, I remember, you know, Jensen talked a lot about what it was like playing against Jared when he was soulless Sam.
Yeah, he didn't like it.
And I suppose that was... I'd be interested to know how is this different from that? Yeah. Is it different because it's actually a different character that he's playing off when Jared is being Gadriel or Ezekiel? Or is it similar to when he was playing, you know, is it difficult for him because, you know, there has been a portion of the season when he's not playing off Sam as we know him. So I just think, particularly off the back of, you know, Jensen spoke quite openly a number of times about how incredibly difficult it was for him to play Dean opposite Jared not being Sam.
Yeah, he said he didn't feel like he had his toolkit.
Yeah, and so I'd just be interested to know how similar or different, you know, this experience has been for him on that level. So just ask Jensen that.
Okay. Okay, that's a good question. I was actually was one of the questions that I was considering. I always like work for about 6 months on my question. I wonder if he knows we all think about our questions for like 6 months before we do the meet and greets. But yeah, and that was one of the questions that I was thinking about asking him, because I had asked him something about season six, in the Chicago, in my first meet and greet I did with him, and he did speak about how difficult he found playing Dean up against Solar Sam, and how he rang the show and said, I know what I'm doing here, you know, like, he just found it really, really hard. So as soon as he started playing up against a Sam that kept popping in and out of being this kind of flat and emotional angel, I thought exactly the same thing. I thought, oh, I wonder how this is different. And, you know, and the other thing I was thinking is, too, he's been talking about how Dean goes to a very dark place, which is obvious is going to happen, and how he's been struggling with not taking that home with him. And I had asked him a question in Dallas about whether the longer he's with Dean, is it harder or easier to separate himself from those emotions and walk away? And he said, well, it's easier because he can now pinpoint who's Jensen and who's Dean. And yet now he's sort of saying this has been whatever he's doing in the early part of the new year, the episodes, is obviously traumatic enough that he's finding that hard to leave behind. So that's interesting in itself. So there you go. Anyway, I will ask. I will ask those questions.
Yay. Mm-hmm. So is there anything else you wanted to comment on about the episode?
What do you think? I don't know. Yeah. No, have we sort of covered it? I'm trying to think. I think it's really horrific what's happened with... I was saying to everybody, I reckon that angel's going to walk off with Sam. I reckon Dean's going to wake up in the morning and Sam will just be gone because the angels kidnapped him. And he went and did that, which was, you know... But he did it in such a way that was just even worse because, you know, when he said... There's been a lot of chat I've seen about what people thought he meant by Sam's, you know, Sam's gone. And I took it as you said, that Sam is in there, but that Gadriel's suppressing him. And
I don't think Sam's actually gone anywhere, but he's being, you know, clamped down inside there and is not being allowed to communicate. There's a couple of things that had come up that I did see people had asked, and I had made a post on Tumblr about it because a number of people were saying, oh, well, Metatron. You know, Metatron made a point of saying that he freed all the imprisoned angels in heaven. So a number of people were saying, well, does that mean Michael and Lucifer?
Yeah, but they're in hell, right?
Exactly. So it has been established that Lucifer's cage, where they're trapped with who I like to now call what's-his-name, Adam.
Now, I've already chastised somebody today for mentioning the A word. I said, we have enough drama in this fandom without bringing up the A word. Thanks very much.
So Lucifer's cage is definitely in hell, so that would not have been affected by Metatron's spell. So they're still all locked away. Now, the other thing was about how Castiel obtained the grace from other angel. And people were saying, well, you know, why didn't you just do that at the beginning of the episode? I mean, at the beginning of the season. And my reading was, well, I don't think Castiel wanted to actually kill a person, an angel, in order to do that. I think, you know, he called it, I don't think he said abomination. What did he say? Barbarian?
Yeah, barbaric or something.
Barbaric, like them. So I think... And it was reiterated again this episode how many angels Cass killed when he was on his Godsteel spree.
When he was stuffed full of Leviathan.
Well, yes, although it wasn't all Leviathan, I don't think. But anyway.
I've got another question. Yes. Do you think, and this is something that sort of popped into my head, do you think that the scenario then that the angel formerly known as Ezekiel showed Dean in Sam's head with Sam talking to death and considering passing on, do you think that that was a true situation, that was what was really happening in Sam's head, or could that have been an angelic manipulation?
I think it could have been. I don't think it was, no. I think the bigger question perhaps around that was that Sam in Sam... a construct of Sam's subconscious, the way Bobby and Dean had been in his head while he was debating with himself about whether he wanted to die. Was death in that scenario actually present as death, or was that a construct? So I know some people had suggested that Sam had constructed that.
Yeah.
And it wasn't actually death. But no, I don't think...
Yeah, because death didn't seem to have any kind of acknowledgement of the angel when the angel sort of flashed through and you know, they all disappeared in Sam's brain. So, I think I always considered that death was a construct of Sam and not actually death
I don't think it really matters either way in that scenario.
No, it doesn't. But it would matter if you know, like, in order to get Dean over the line with saying yes, Gadriel showed Dean what was his worst nightmare of Sam deciding he was going to die.
Did Dean actually see that? So I thought he just sort of popped in and said, you know, don't go, but I don't think he saw any of that. I wasn't under the impression he'd seen that exchange.
Oh, no, he was a bit later, wasn't he?
You know, certainly Ezekiel, Gadriel could have done that as part of the deception. I don't think so, and I know... And on a stepping back on a sort of a narrative level, I don't think it would make any adds anything to the story to find that out now. I mean, other than perhaps, you know, taking away some of the blame from Dean for it happening, but I don't think it's significant enough that Sam's going to go, "Oh, you were tricked," given that Dean's intent was to let him in. So no, yeah. I don't think so. I think. I think we'll go forward from here. I mean, I still think it'll be interesting to see, you know, again, once Sam does find out and hopefully Gadriel's out of his body, whatever state Sam is left in, what he remembers about that time, what, you know, whether he remembers wanting to die, what, you know, state he's going to be in. I think all that's going to be...
I was wondering too if Gadriel could have actually healed Sam right from the get-go, but chose instead to jump into him as a vessel and you know, like, tell that lie. But in reality, he might have been able to zap him better.
Yes, or I think there is perhaps a question. I think Gadriel was injured himself, though. I think that might have added to it. We saw when he first meets Dean, the other angel punches him out pretty easily. We do see that image of his broken wings in the next episode. So I think it was, and whether he could have healed, I do think he could have healed Sam quicker. Maybe he has healed Sam.
Maybe he has. But God said he was, what did she say? It was like duct tape and safety pins on the inside. Well, yeah. So we've got to assume that Sam's still pretty messy on the inside.
Yes, but maybe Gadriel is healed himself. So anyway, All to Be Found Out. So the show comes back on 14th of January. So we've got time for a little break. We can go away and heal ourselves inside. Hopefully. I'll certainly be doing a season 9 so far rewatch, and I'm sure we'll a podcast between now and the next episode coming back on just looking back over what the season's been like so far. I mean, I've certainly thought it's been a cracker of a season that's fired off some amazing episodes. It feels like it's gone at a breakneck speed, which is always a sign of a strong narrative. And, I think the device of having the ongoing tension of what is happening with Ezekiel and, is he healing Sam? Is he good? Is he bad? And just having that sort of drip fed onto us over the has kept that tension going in a great way. So even when you have a Monster of the Week episode, that's still been in the background.
It's always been there. There's always been there. I don't think there's been one episode where there hasn't been at least some kind of reference to the storyline surrounding Sam and the angel inside and Dean's choice. I think it's always been there, and I think that's been, as you said, a really strong narrative for the season. And I agree, it's gone at a, I can't believe that, we're already 9 eps in, and
yes,
and I'm like, what, how'd that happen? And it's been so strong. I've just thoroughly enjoyed every single episode. There really hasn't been one where, and I can't remember a season where in the first half there hasn't been like at least one episode where I've kind of gone, well, yeah, it was okay, but I've just have found this whole beginning of this season so strong. Mm-hmm. And some of them have just been amazing and just like massively kick ass.
No, it's been a great, so I felt the same way about the beginning of season 8
So did I. I love season 8.
But before that, I'd probably go back to season 4 for the best start to a season. So best first half of the season. So
Definitely. I would do the same. I think 8 was fantastic as well. I really loved the whole setup of 8. But I would probably then go back to 4 and 5 probably for before that. So, which is, it's in its 9th year. I mean, it's crazy that a show keeps ratings, getting better. And his ratings are so
through the roof.
So good.
Keep watching. We did, of course, finish the voting for the People's Choice Awards this week ended. So we have to wait almost for another month. I think it's 3 weeks before the awards. So
yay, how exciting.
Cross fingers. I know there were some Supernatural fans who put in absolutely supernaturally heroic voting efforts up in the hundreds of thousands.
Hundreds of thousands.
Yes, hundreds of thousands of votes.
Just amazing.
Thank you, because if we win, it's because of everyone, but it's particularly because of the dedication of those fans. Let's hope we get to see the boys at another awards ceremony.
I hope they get to dress up in matching suits again, accidentally. God love them.
So we'll be back sometime soon. So thanks from Jules.
And thanks from Amy. I'll be right there.